going through the car wash today. Wherefore art thou Itumeleng Kune?
Kune dived super early.
Yeah.
Like wrong direction as well.
Yeah, I think he was that, even off camera at some point.
What's going on with Kune right now?
Spaghetti, a South African classic.
Spaghetti and mint.
Every time. Every time.
Spaghetti and mint.
Spaghetti and mint.
Like South African local food.
And Tekomodise, too good to sell.
Now they're thinking, yeah, but Kaizer Chiefs players have seen Musona going overseas. But Musona's contract was different to yours. So if you don't take care of your contract, you'll never go overseas. That's why you see Itu is also still around. He had no buyout clause.
Today is a great day for car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on Sokola Duma Radio. This is Ohlangana Khona.
Good day and welcome to the car wash. On today's show, a weekend of legendary derbies. Who will replace Dennis Onyango at Sundowns? And what went wrong for OJ Mabizela? I am your host, Slu Paho, but I am not alone in the studio. As usual, we have Teko Modise. Teko, how you doing?
I'm good on you, sir.
All good, all good. And Sean got a lot older.
And a lot better looking as well.
Clint Roper is joining us for the second time now on the car wash.
Yeah,
how are you doing?
I believe our last one was the top downloaded show, so we're going to go for it again. Sean under pressure.
We're going to break those records. We start off with Nedbank Cup results. The round of 16 played out last weekend. Black Leopards beat Amavarara 2-0. TS Sporting beat Happy Wanderers 4-3 in a 7-goal thriller. Real Kings defeated Mbombela United 2-1 with a 93rd-minute winner. Celtic beat Eric Tinkler's men, Maritzburg United 3-2. Celtic had a 94th-minute winner. And Baroka beat Hungry Lions 4-2 on penalties. This past Monday, though, Bidvest Wits beat Chipper United 2-0. Both goals came in the space of about 3 minutes. And in the big one, the big story, I suppose, Chiefs knocked out against Highlands Park on penalties. What did you guys make of that performance?
Clint? Take it, you can take it away. Look, I think that particular loss puts Middendorp under so much pressure going into this.
Yeah.
To lose to a team like that, when you consider the resources that he has available, as opposed to what Highlands Park have available, is sacrilege, I think, for a Kaizer Chiefs supporter. So I think the pressure will be even bigger on him. He would have hoped to have cruised through that. Didn't happen. If anything, it helps Pirates more than anything else. I don't know what you think, Teko.
I think for the first time, actually, Kaizer Chiefs in a position that is very uncomfortable for them. You know, and you can also see with the loss as well. Before that, like, everybody wanted to see Kune being back in the team playing. And you can see also in the game, like, when they started delaying because they wanted to go through penalties because, you know, probably maybe they were hoping that Kune might actually be saving the penalties, and you know what happened after that.
Yep.
But it's just that for me, it's very interesting to see how Kaizer Chiefs actually handle the stress that they're in. I think it's the first time actually that in this kind of stress where there's so many less points, like they didn't have, like, you don't remember first, they were like 10, 11 points ahead. Now they're like 4.
Yep.
And they're playing a big, big, big game. And whether Middendorp will select Itu again or Akpe, it'll be very also interesting. And to see also the lineup, how it'll be, we'll see it actually for Atlanta Pirates,
yeah,
for and Kaizer Chiefs as well. So it'll be very interesting. So for me, just think it'll be the first time seeing Middendorp being under so much stress. How would he handle it? Would he come out of it? That's very interesting for me. I think this is a game that actually will determine whether they're ready to win the league or not.
Yeah, and in that Highlands Park loss, also the way that they lost, because they did have an advantage at some stage in the penalty shootouts.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Maluleka and Kamabiliad missed their penalties and they lose in, sudden death. And Highlands make no mistake. I actually wanted to ask you guys, did you see, Shalulile's penalty in the penalty shootout? The way Kune dived super early, like wrong direction as well.
Yeah, I think he was even off camera at some point.
And like, it just got circulated on Twitter a bunch. People were like, what's going on with Kune right now? And then in the other one, Sundowns win against VUT 2-0, despite having four suspensions. And what I wanted to ask is, Bito kind of admitted that they got all of those yellow cards in the PSL on purpose so that they could serve those suspensions in the Nedbank Cup. And, you know, knowing that they're facing a small team like Aval University of Technology, what do you think of that tactic of purposefully getting
Isn't that match fixing? Can that not be match fixing?
In the FIFA rule book, there's a rule that stops you from doing that, but I think it's UEFA and it doesn't really, there's no rule in SAFA's rule book, it seems. Because he openly admitted it in the post-match interview that that's what they were doing.
I don't think it's match fixing. I think it's clever. It's clever coaching. And hats off to him for managing the squad. It happens at the highest levels. Mm. You'll see it happening in Champions League rounds as well. So hats off to team management. I think possibly referees should be made aware of the situation and players that are looking at cards and possibly go over to those individual players and say, listen, I will be looking at you. Don't try and trick me. I know you're looking for a yellow card.
Yeah.
So I think referees maybe have a bigger role to play in those kind of situations. But no, I don't think you can point fingers at Pitsa. I think you've got to applaud him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I also said that Pitsa, it wasn't his first time actually doing it. It's just that it was the first time being exposed in that way. Because I think Pitsa's very smart. He always look at the game ahead and trying to clean out those yellow cards. But yeah, I mean, that's clever coaching, like Clint said. I think it's, but of course, doesn't look nice in the eye. You know, it's not nice for football, but.
Yeah.
But like he said, he has to do what he has to do. I think if I was in his position, I'll do the same thing.
Yeah, what confused me, though, is doing it so early, because they were time-wasting on the 80th minute already. And I just felt like, against VUT, you have the personnel to go out and get more goals, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Win that match by 3-4-0. But, you know, I agree with you guys in that if there's not a rule against it, take advantage of it. It is what it is.
Yeah, but it's just that the scary part is not, it's just because now he has admitted it, I think now it's going to create, like, a lot of loopholes now. Because now you'll be seeing teams doing it. You'll be seeing goalkeepers now wasting time. I think there's going to be a lot of grey areas into this system. And I think maybe SAFA, the PSL should come in and actually maybe find a way how to deal with it. Because you're going to see a whole lot of it. Because now we're dealing with teams that are going to be in a relegation zone. We're going to be dealing with teams that are fighting for championships.
Sure.
So there's going to be a lot of problems there. Because of now, if Peter didn't admit, you know, we'll be debating about it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the fact that he admitted that, I think it's not a nice feeling.
Yeah, I mean, to sort it, as you say, it's a loophole and it gets exploited at all levels. And the one thing that's a bit tricky is sometimes you need a yellow to get your accumulation of yellows, but it's a very fine line. And possibly, I don't know if the punishment is worse if you're given a red, but possibly what should happen in situations like this is if the referee thinks that a player has been instructed by his coach to get the yellow, i.e. cheat the system, possibly the coach should get the red, because then he's not on the bench for those important games.
Mm. Yeah.
So that might be a way of dealing with it. It's a tricky situation. It would be harsh, but essentially it is the coach who's getting the yellow.
Yeah.
So why not punish him?
Agreed. Do we have an update on the leaderboard from last week?
We do. A big game to focus on was Leicester versus City. Sean got that right. Tekka, you didn't. However, that does leave the leaderboard tied again, 36 out of 57 for both Tekka and Sean.
Losing the lead, man. Now it's just the same again.
Yeah.
And you guys always have this thing
I'll
of
come back. I'll
making
come
the
back.
Same predictions. So you got to throw a couple of spanners in the work there. So for the big interview, I had famed player agent Mike McCobb, and he spoke about OJ Mabizela, one of the most famous. What could have happened in terms of legendary South African players? And this is what he had to say.
Very difficult to say because Dihaswa played in the Premiership. Mbassuma played in the Premiership. I don't even want to talk about Mabizela. Probably the most talented player I've ever laid my eyes on. Straight from Orlando Pirates into the starting lineup at Tottenham Hotspur at the age of 22 or 23 years old. You know, played on the biggest stage in the world in the EPL. And therefore, he had to be probably the most exciting player that we've managed. Exciting. But obviously didn't realize his full potential.
Later in that interview, he also spoke about this one battle that he had with Cristiano Ronaldo. And the way Mike McCobb says, he essentially put Ronaldo in his pocket and, you know, kept him quiet the entire game. And I think it's possibly the biggest disappointment we've had in a player of that caliber in this country. I think maybe you could say Collins Mbesuma after that 25-goal season, but I think Mabizela, especially scoring on debut, we were all excited, I think.
Yeah, look, I agree. We have some incredible talents. Maybe it's the most talented one he's managed. There's so many stories about Mabizela and what went wrong over there. When he was in the UK, considering where he's come from, it might have been an option to put a minder with him and stay with him and just show him the way, as opposed to send him. I know hindsight is 20/20 vision, but that might have helped. If I'm not mistaken, on debut they played him as a defensive midfielder as opposed to a central defender, and I think he scored from about 35 yards out. It was goal of the month in the English Premier League at that stage. So he was definitely good enough to be there. In terms of the Ronaldo story, United actually went to Sporting to play a friendly there, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it was either Gary Neville or Phil Neville was playing as a wide defender in that particular game. And Ronaldo, a young Ronaldo, came played in that game and tore him to shreds, tore him a new and on the flight back home, the players went to... At first, they ribbed the Neville brother for being ripped apart the whole game. And said, how do you little a youngster like that make you look like that? Because at that stage, that was when he was doing the stepovers and all. He was a lot more flamboyant than he is today. And they actually went to Ferguson and said, you've got to sign this kid. The fact that Mabizela stuck him in his back pocket when Sporting played Spurs in a friendly shows you just how good Mabizela. I think he could have played it on any stage. I think when Barcelona came down the first time and played against Sundowns, the one player that the Barcelona management spoke about after the game was Mabizela, and he said this guy's just ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think it's one of those disappointing stories. Especially, I think for me as a former footballer, it's painful, you know, because this is a guy that actually, you know, getting excited when he's in the national team because you know the quality that he brings into the team. And he wasn't much of a talker anyway. And it was very, very weird. After dinner or lunch, he's out. Doesn't sit around the table and chit chat. And he had that kind of character, but when he's on the pitch, he's a beast. You know, I liked that about him. And it's just unfortunate that it didn't work out. But, I mean, it was fantastic when I was watching him growing up, especially when he played for Orlando Pirates, you know. It was always amazing to see how calm he is, how mature he is at the young age that he was. But I just hope that one day he'll be able to tell his side of the story. I think that would be great, actually, you know, because now we're hearing what Mike is saying, what everybody's saying, like he has to actually tell his side of the story, what happened, so that other guys as well can learn from what he went through, you know.
Yeah, so it's like, I think on the very first episode of The Car Wash, you mentioned that older players don't reveal their stories. They don't talk much. And, you know, a lot of these younger players don't get to learn those lessons and kind of repeat the same mistakes history tends
to repeat. Yeah, I think we don't have to wait for 20, 50 years to actually tell our stories. You know, the fresher it is, I think the better it is. I mean, these young boys that are playing right now, they need to understand, you know, what is it that they have to face or what is it that they might even go through, you know. And I feel like if we also had an opportunity to hear certain things from the guy that played before me, I'll probably maybe would have turned out a better player because of now. Those are the kind of things that are, you know, I know that they're coming. I didn't know what fame would bring. I didn't know what Orlando Pirates will do to my game and my personality. I didn't know those kind of things. And I think it's important that when we do have a unique South African story, it needs to be told as soon as possible, because you never know the people, how many people you actually inspire from that.
Yeah, agreed. To their credit, guys like Junaid Hartley, who was equally as talented as Mabizela. I mean, Junaid Hartley, at one stage in 442 magazine, which is a European football magazine, was rated in the top 20 young players in the world.
Yeah,
our own Junaid Hartley. I think he might have gone to France after that for a little while, but then he fell off the rails, and he's now going around telling his story. I think Pizzo's used him once or twice to come and speak to the Sundowns players and let them know just how quickly it can go all wrong. Jabu Mahlangu, another example of a guy who's really turned his life around and has shared his experiences. I think he's involved in a couple of campaigns in Nedbank, Supersport, etc. And he goes around and he tells these youngsters. But Teko's 100% right. The stories need to be told sooner.
Yeah.
Because the players who are coming through need to benefit from that. It can't be told 20 or 30 years later. So If old John is listening to this,
yeah,
give us a call. Let's get you on the car wash. Let's tell your story. Let's help the next generation.
Definitely. Leading into our discussion around the Soweto Derby, let's do pole position.
Pole position.
Whee! Pole position is where we jump on Facebook and we ask our listeners a question, a topical question relating to local football. We asked you guys, who is the top key player in this weekend's Soweto Derby? And here's what you had to say.
There is only one top key player, Kabadini Mhangu.
That will be the top key player.
Mamela, Mango, Uli.
Dikrovich for Kaizer Chiefs, Mango for Pirates.
Temekos Lodge.
Makaringe in the side of Pirates. In the side of Kaizer Chiefs, I have Cardoso.
Interesting picks there. I actually didn't expect Cardoso.
I mean, really?
I mean, if there's a penalty, sure, but
come on.
I don't think otherwise. So who would you rank in your top? I'm very interested in who will dominate between Nurkovic and Mahango. I have Vincent Pule specifically because Highlands Park exposed Chiefs on the set pieces. And Vincent Pule's left foot, we know. So who would you guys have? Clint, who do you rank as like the most important?
Yeah. So excitingly for Soweto Derby, which up until recently has delivered a lot of 0-0 draws and it's been a case of who's going to be tight at the back. It's now the story of two strikers. And that's how it should be for a Soweto Derby. It shouldn't be about who's going to keep a clean sheet or who's going to be in goal for Kaizer Chiefs. It should be who's the guy more? Who's going to win this game for us?
Yeah.
If you score one goal, can our guy score two? Can we score three? So it's exciting. It's an exciting time for South African football when Pirates, Chiefs go into a derby. They're in the top three or four teams in the league. They're both pushing, and it's two strikers who the crowd is looking at. So for me, Nurkovic, Mango, those are the two wheel that the whole of South Africa will be watching, and I hope they come to the party.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you can't ignore, especially the form of Mango and the importance of Nurkovic from Kaizer Chiefs side. But also, two players actually that come to mind is Memela and Lebo Manyama, merely because of, I think they're the kings of assists in their teams. You know, I think they play a very important role in, you know, in their teams, especially Memela, like coming out from a guy that I actually knew that he was just a winger. Now he's playing as a 10 and the way that he plays it, I mean, it's amazing to see. And Lebo as well, you know, he's very important in Kaizer Chiefs transition. Whenever they win the ball, they always want to try and find Lebo too, so that he can pass those balls to Okama, to Nogovic. So I think those two players are very important. And also it's going to be who will do the better job, especially in the midfield, whether it's Katsande, whether it's Ben Motswari on the other side, because on the other side, you need to make sure that Lebo Manyama doesn't get those balls. On the other side, you need to make sure that Memela doesn't get that space. So, and I also think that, you know, it'll be great to see a game that has goals and both the strikers that we spoke about, they actually scored. Because we want to see a striker that has come end of the season, they had 19, 20 goals, you know, because it's been 13-12 every year. So now,
yeah.
I think Mango is important for Mango to actually add on his tally so that he can get that.
And imagine the story. Mango gets his 15th. We haven't seen a striker reach 15 in years.
Yeah.
And he gets it in the Soweto Derby.
Didn't he call 15 goals? Didn't he make a prediction?
Yeah. He did.
So you're right. If he gets it in this one.
It's big.
And all those people who said, don't put yourself under pressure by naming a number. We need more characters like that.
Yeah.
As Latin will tell you, I'll get 20 this year.
Yeah, but
he'll remind you when he gets it as well.
Yeah, for sure. But he just said in South Africa, everybody that has said that, they've never.
so we know. Like a curse.
People come out and like, kick off and sure. Like, I'm like, watch me, this year is my season.
Yeah.
We're still waiting.
Yeah,
you know?
Correct.
So for Mango to actually do that and actually be able to score those kind of goals, like, so much respect for that.
Yeah, and is that the minimum requirement for the Golden Boot? Is there a minimum requirement in place now?
Well, I'd say that there's people on Mango's tail, so I
wouldn't
say
he's going to go beyond 15, though.
Yeah, it
needs to, because Shalili is coming as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be very interesting. Probably maybe the person that will actually take it, maybe it'll be 19, 20, somewhere there.
We hope 15, so.
It'll be dope, though. Imagine we have maybe two top goal scorers, 20 goals each. And then next day, we're looking forward to 22, 23.
Yeah.
So that record of Mbesuma can be broken at once, you know, some point.
And I tell you what, Leslie Manyatele is looking down from the heavens watching this derby, and he's hoping that top score award goes to a guy in a Pirates jersey.
Yeah,
so hopefully he's in the ghost is with him in that jersey come Derby Day.
And you know, like most of the time, besides Lodge, actually, it's been a while since we've seen a Orlando Pirates player going to the podium actually winning something.
Correct.
Mm. You know, so we actually dope to see a Orlando Pirates player go in there, you know, second year in a row. True. Last season was Lodge. This time it will be... Yeah, that'll probably maybe will bring confidence into the team, especially going into next season, maybe to do better, because they also need to show, you know, what is it that have been building for so many years? Because we know that Pirates at some point was in the building phase. Sure. Now they've got a solid team. Mm-hmm. They need to bring something into the table.
Yeah. How much does, you know, we always say throw form out the window when it comes to the Soweto Derby, because you can never predict. But it's kind of difficult to ignore this season. I mean, Chiefs are on this kind of downward spiral, the pressure is on them, and Pirates have just resurged, and they've come back with such venom that we didn't see when it was the beginning of the season. Mm. You know, they were struggling, they were bottom half of the table, and now suddenly they're second, third position ahead right now. How much would you say form plays into this weekend's derby?
So look, obviously Teco's got a much better take on this than I have. He's played in them. You always hear pundits go, it doesn't matter where you are on the table, whether the team's bottom half, top half, log position doesn't affect this game. Mm. In this case, I disagree. I think Kaizer Chiefs, being where they are, their log position, ironically, affects them. It affects the way they go into this. I don't think they play with as much freedom as Pirates do. Mm. And so it actually counts against them that they're up there. It's the business end of the league. It's these kind of games that decide at the end of the day whether you step onto the podium or not. So that's my opinion. I wouldn't agree that it's a derby and form doesn't count. And log position doesn't count. It does.
Yeah, I think it's one of those derbies that actually now they mean a lot, not just the game for the fans and for people to come and enjoy. And I think this one means more to both teams. I think if any team loses there on the weekend, the chances are it's the end of the season for them. Mm. You know, so I think it's important. And like Clint has said, I think there's nothing to do with form. And with the Orlando Pirates, they probably maybe the underdogs go into this game, but they've got the most to benefit if they win. Yeah. You know, Orlando Kaizer Chiefs, they're, like I said, they're under pressure. They've never been in this kind of position before. The last time they were under pressure, it was, I think, when they're playing Arrows, they won like a last second of the last kick of the game. And this will be actually the second time. And with a big game like this, I think it'll actually test Kaizer Chiefs' character as well. But like I did say like earlier on, that Kaizer Chiefs, the only problem that I had with Kaizer Chiefs, it wasn't because of how they play. It's because they don't have depth into the team, you know? And when the question will be, if things are getting tougher, because of, I know how Orlando Pirates play, how they attack, if things are getting tougher, what are they going to do? Are they going to bring Zuma in again like they usually do? Because of now when Kama is around, Kaizer Chiefs needs to play different. Because now it's Kama, Castro, and Nikovic. They need to play different. You know what I'm saying? And when Kama is not around, we know that it comes to label Nikovic on the side. So now it's different. So now, if things are not working well, are they still going to bring Zuma in? So that's the predictability that we spoke about. And then yet again, in the midfield, they only have backers that can actually help them play. Mm. Other than that, there's nothing.
Yeah,
they don't have a backup for Matou at the back that will be as solid as Matou, even though Matou is not as solid as we thought he is. Mm. Or Cardozo is the one that is actually solid, but they don't have. I don't think pound to pound, I don't think Kaizer Chiefs have a plan or something that they can do to actually to upset Orlando Pirates, especially the way Orlando Pirates play.
Yeah.
Set pieces, yes, they might score via set piece because Wayne is not as great coming out and collecting the ball. Mm. But in terms of open play, if Orlando Pirates can bring the team that they had, especially in the second half against Vets, trust me, you're going to see a derby that is full of goals from one side.
Yeah,
because I believe that Kaizer Chiefs has got so many things, so many wrong things that they're doing defensively. And if Pirates can find those things and use them, I promise you this is going to be a derby that we'll be speaking about for the next 2 years, especially with the form that they're in as well.
But what's interesting is the very thing that we were all praising Kaizer Chiefs for at the start of the season. They know they're starting 11. They pick the same team. We know what substitutions they're going to make. They're an oiled machine. And Mindorp was being praised for that. Yes, they weren't playing maybe attractive football, but they were playing winning football, and they had a system. Everyone could see the system, but they couldn't do anything about it, and the system worked. Mm. Come the second half of the season, the fact that they haven't had to go to plan B as such and plan C and find different ways to win, and now they're having to do it, is counting against them. Whereas Pirates, as you say, Pirates can do a lot of different things. They've got a lot of different ways to hurt you. They can go direct. They can keep the ball. They can push you high up. They can press high up on the field. Or they can play on the counter. They've got all those things. Chiefs play a very certain way this season, and they're not really changing it up from what I can see.
No. Yeah. It's this strange thing with Middendorp. You know, earlier in this first half of the season, he beats Sundowns twice. He beats Pirates twice. And now second half of the season, we're nervous. You know, Chiefs fans' hands are sweating now. Suddenly, he doesn't look like he has fresh ideas. He doesn't look like he has a plan of attack if they have to come back from 1-0 down, for example. You know, they grabbed that late winner against Arrows. But to be honest, if Arrows had scored first in that game, I don't know if Chiefs would have had it in them to come back. And this is a Pirates team that it's super dangerous. And now there's this other question of Kune versus Akpeyi now. You know, we did say we don't want to talk about keepers in goal, but it kind of is a big question. Do you start Kune in this derby, or do you start with, you know, old trustworthy Akpeyi, who's got a couple, you know, player of the match awards this season? He's had a good season.
If Mudendop starts Itumeleng Kune, and then I realize Mudendop is not the one that's in charge of putting out the lineup, there is no way that he can start Itu. Because how many games have Akpeyi played this season, you know, and how many clean sheets does he have? And then you look at Wayne Sandilands, they're more or less the same in terms of the stats as well. These are two important goalkeepers, okay, maybe including Onyango. These are three important goalkeepers in the league right now. So now if you're putting Itumeleng Kune now, this big game like this, that's an emotional decision. It's not tactical. Because it's not going to help you anything with tactics. So it's an emotional decision. And once you do that, you can't stop it. So now you open up this route that anybody that goes and get injured, which means Bennett Parker can stay for 2 months. When he comes back, he needs to play. So now there needs to be like a plan within the team. You need to also wait for your chance to come and play. And they should have two or three games that are very bad. I'm like, okay, Itu, now this is your chance. But you can't just be emotionally just because Itu is there. And I'm like, now he needs to come back. Akpeyi has been doing great. So what are you doing to Akpeyi's confidence when you do that? Because this is a guy that actually nobody believed he'll do the stuff that he did.
Sure. Yeah.
This was the first game Akpeyi was on his boots chip.
Yeah.
One shot, Akpeyi, hey, butterfingers. Now he's improved. Now he has gained trust in the Chiefs fans as well. So now, those the same guys that said they wanted to see Itu playing against Highlands Park, they're the same fans that are saying, hey, we need Akpeyi back. So Kaizer Chiefs will never be satisfied. But I think for Mudendop come the derby, he needs to go with this tried and tested, and this is the guy that I've been playing with the whole year.
Yeah.
Because it's important not to tamper with that, because of now he's got nothing else but to look at the league. If he doesn't win come Saturday, I promise you, I'm saying this right now, he'll never win the league.
Yeah. And it's tough, you know. It's interesting, Brian Baloyi, I think, did an interview recently where he said that he'd pick Kune over Akpeyi, but, you know, it's Spider-Man, Spider-Boy. Maybe there's some personal relationship there. I don't know. What would you go for?
It's such a difficult decision for him, especially based on the last result with Kune there. Tactically, what does he gain by putting Kune in? Definitely, when it comes to distribution, Kune is up there with the best in the world. So there maybe you win. And if Pirates are playing this side of the halfway line and pushing up, it allows Kune's distribution to hurt you on the counter, which possibly Akpeyi doesn't have in him. But from a consistency, playing week in and week out in the grind, I think that's what's needed in this particular game. Yes, Kune's been on the biggest stage. He's played for Bafana. He's played in a World Cup. I'm not sure Akpeyi can say he's played in these kind of derbies before. But certainly, based on his form, he deserves the number one jersey. And in games like this. Because what happens if Kune plays and they lose this? Then do you put Akpeyi back in? Then it's too late.
It's too late, yeah.
Yeah.
So tough call. I wouldn't like to be Middendorp this week.
Yeah. So last year, Jerry Skosana did an interview with Kickoff.
Yeah.
And he was talking about taunting players before the match.
Jerry was stupid.
Yeah.
Jerry was he's a guy that he's got too many mind games.
But yeah, he said in the tunnel, this is a direct quote from him, he said, I'm going to play Chiefs. In the tunnel, I would say, hey, you guys look pretty. Look at yourselves. You look like beautiful ladies. I'm going to have a little bit of a snack on the field. just the ridiculousness of that.
That's Dash, though. And what's funny about that is I was coached by him, I think, in NFD. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he was a player coach. Like, he still behaved the same way. Like, youngsters will be playing against a young team. And he will choose himself to start. Trust me, trust me, he'll go off on this young boy.
I'm like, I believe it.
This is a young boy. Yeah, but that's who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember also, he used to take me like an off-season to go and play those off-season tournaments in the hoods. We'll play that. He'll still be the same. He'll fight the fans. He'll fight.
Yeah.
Jerry will never change. He's a winner. Naturally, so when you talk about that, I believe you, because I know Jerry is crazy, and trust me, he'll tell you that, no, don't worry, I'm just trying to intimidate, but he'll go on, it'll be so annoying, but that's who he is, that's what he does, and he was great at it, actually.
Legendary. And the game's better for players like that. You want crazy guys to say crazy things before games, to hype it up. We don't have enough of that.
Yeah.
Our coaches do it. Our coaches are Pitso is very good at hyping games up and creating needle in the stadium. We don't have enough players who are ballsy enough to do that and get involved in that. Let's get a striker saying, I'll score a hat-trick against Chiefs.
Yeah.
And all of that sudden, that becomes the talking point. You speak to Tebza, Teboho Moloi, and Doc Amolo, and they used to exchange phone calls before games and wind each other up and say things, because they knew that Doc knew if he said something to Tebza about what they'd done at training that day and prep for the derby game, that it would filter back to the Pirates team through Tebza.
Mm.
And Tebza did the same. I'm not sure that happens anymore.
Yeah,
it would be phenomenal if someone went to Twitter and the two captains had a go at each other on Twitter leading up to this, just to hype it up a little bit.
Definitely. So I want to try and test you guys here. Where do you think the Soweto Derby ranks? I've got the ranking of all the derbies, the biggest derbies in the world. Where do you think it ranks on the world list? Take a guess.
I think 8, but it's in the top 10.
Guess 8.
Yeah, it's definitely in the top 10. I'm going to go 6.
Both wrong. It ranks 12th, and I'll quickly go through all of them, and you'll kind of realize, yeah, I guess in terms of just like people talking about it. So it goes El Clasico, Manchester Derby, Man United versus Liverpool, Madrid Derby, Milan Derby, Der Clasico, which is Bayern versus Dortmund, Super Clasico, which is River Plate versus Boca Juniors, North London Derby, Merseyside Derby, the Old Firm Derby, Rangers versus Celtic, Cairo Derby is just ahead of the Soweto Derby. That's Zamalek versus Al Ahly. And then it's the Soweto Derby. And just behind that is Club African versus Esperance, which is the Tunis Derby.
And there's no Pretoria Derby there.
No Pretoria Derby there. I wonder what they have to do, actually.
Nah, it'll never get to
you, there. You know the one difference between our derby, the Soweto Derby, and all the other derbies in world football? Mm-hmm. And I think this is a beautiful difference and should elevate us up that list, or if a different list was done, is that in every other derby that you've mentioned there, they need to have police and army separating fans, getting them into the stadiums at different times so that they don't come into contact with each other.
Yeah.
Ours is the only derby in the world that means as the win and the loss hurts as badly, but they're sitting together, in amongst each other, singing, dancing, crying, feeling the pain, and celebrating the win.
Yeah.
But we're not trying to kill each other. We're not trying to. There's no tear gas to try and get us to stop fighting with each other. And I think that's if there was a ranking of the most beautiful derbies in the world, the Soweto Derby would have to rank as number one.
Definitely. And it's interesting to me that we drink just as much as any other country.
No, we outdrink.
Yeah.
We outdrink. We're the top of the
Yeah, and so there's Black Label Castle flowing, but no beef, no fights.
But I think also it comes back to the characters that you spoke about. If we had players like your Jerry's, Skosana, and right now, and hype up the derby the way that it's supposed to, we'll actually get back to the fans, being that, when Kaizer Chiefs scores, and then the Orlando Pirates will go quiet the whole game. Now it's no longer the same. Now you see Orlando Pirates fans sitting with Super Sport fans and
correct,
all that kind of stuff. So I think if we had characters like your Jerry's and them right now, it would be so dope. But you just said right now we don't have, and everybody, that's why you see now everybody team that loses, people go on their Instagram and post their man of the match. They don't care. Most people, they actually don't understand what it means for a derby. They don't understand when a team loses, you'll find a friend, Orlando Pirates fan, that's just lost it, that will go a week without eating. He'll be miserable for the whole week. I think this is an important game. I think players that are involved, they need to understand how big this thing is.
Mm-hmm,
and for you to be part of it already, you're part of the history. Because not many players are able to actually be say, I've played a derby. So this is an important, especially this one. This one is just as important And I think they need to realize, especially for Orlando Pirates, if they win this, Chief, I'm sure Orlando Pirates fan will be working, you know, topless there in Soweto because of, you know, the breaking rights.
Sure.
And I was speaking with one of the fans in, during the week. He said, we don't want Pirates to win. We don't want Kaizer Chiefs to win the league because if they do, they're putting us under pressure and they talk too much.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that if Kaizer Chiefs win the league, there'll be billboards everywhere in Joburg and the whole of South Africa.
Yeah.
And I said, but you guys will do the same if you win the league. But he said, it's better because of them. They're not as flamboyant.
They would
as
rather
Kaizer
have
Chiefs.
Sundowns win the league.
They don't mind.
They're saying
if Sundowns and Vets win the league, that's fine. Not this one.
Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious. I did 10 quickfire questions with Aubrey Modiba. 10 quickfire questions is where we get your favorite PSL players on the line and put them on the spot. Play that.
My name is Aubrey Modiba, SuperSport United midfielder, and these are my 10 quick fire questions.
Okay, who is the funniest guy in the PSL that you have played with?
Vincent Kobola.
Vincent Kobola. We've had that name a couple of times.
Who's
the flashiest dresser?
I'd say Keegan Buchanan.
And then who is the worst dressed player in the PSL?
Tomono Data. Yeah.
All right. What's the worst mistake that you've made in a match?
My worst mistake I've made in a match. I think losing the ball against Amazulu at the squad.
And then who is a teammate who thinks that he's funny, but actually he's not funny?
Washington Arubi.
Okay. What is your best footballing memory?
Winning player of the season at SuperSport.
And then what is the best goal that you have scored in a match?
Goal against Golden Arrows.
What type of goal?
In Bombela. I got the ball from Brett. Then I played 1-2 with Brokey. Then, Cracker from outside the box.
What is your favorite car at the moment?
Not that I'm driving it, but A45 Mercedes-Benz AMG.
And then what is your favorite local food, favorite South African food?
It has to be spaghetti and mint.
And then what is your favorite holiday destination?
Italian stallions.
Paris, France.
Paris, France. Have you been?
Nope. I'm planning to.
Every time.
Spaghetti
and mince.
South African local food.
And why is that? I've also had that one, that exact answer before. I've had pasta or spaghetti bolognese or something before. And I'm like, it's in the name, dude. Spaghetti. Oh man, but that was a funny thing about Aubrey's one. It took so long for him to name worst dressed. Like they edited it out.
Seriously?
It was like he was thinking for like a minute, and then I asked it after. Like I asked the rest of the questions, came back to it. Then he said Tabo Nodad. But I was like, man, like some players don't want to roast. Who was it? It was Sompo. Sompo named three guys.
Top three all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's the worst dressed? Myself.
Yeah. So in the paper, we have this story about Dennis Onyango and who will replace him. So they've named three guys here. One, Brandon Peterson, Bidvest Wits keeper. That one actually kind of surprised me. I don't know if it's been a rumor for years or anything, but Brandon is he's still fighting with Ricardo Goss for a starting position.
Mm-hmm.
At Wits, And then there's Jody February, who's actually already signed, but he's on loan at Cape Umoya. And then, of course, Richard Ofori. You know, there's been news about him. Everyone wants him. Who would you guys go for? And what do you make of this even being a question, considering that they do have Jody February gaining experience in GLAAD Africa? Who do you think is the right option for Sundowns?
For Sundowns, I think February will be the one, merely because he's young,
mm-hmm.
and his age on his side as well. And you want to, you know, you want to put him into the deep end as soon as possible,
mm-hmm.
you know, where he's in traveling in Africa and experiencing the Champions League at his age, so that you want him when he's 3 years, 4 years from now, he's as top as Onyango is,
mm-hmm.
you know. And with Ofori, I think he's a great keeper. Yes. He's good and everybody wants him, but you would want something different as well. I think Ofori and Onyango are more or less the same.
Mm.
They're not good in distribution, but they're good shot stoppers, you know. And at Sundowns, you would want to... You look at Sundowns, the way they play. If Kennedy Mwene starts, you see Sundowns start playing from the back. When does Onyango They don't play from the back because he's not comfortable on his feet. So now it's Sundowns. You look at the system. You look at how what the culture is. You want to start playing from the back. You want to dominate. So you want the youngsters to do that, to be able to do that. So I think because with Ofori at this age, he'll never change what he is.
Yeah.
You know. So I think February will be actually a good choice to actually replace him.
Clint, do you think that Sundowns are maybe looking at their wallets and how fat they are and going Ofori, or do you think they're going to stick with the youngster?
Yeah, look, I don't think money's ever a problem for Sundowns. I think they can go anywhere in the continent or off the continent for that matter and go fetch a number one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure a club like Sundowns allows a young keeper to grow into the role.
Mm.
It's not that kind of a club. Possibly at a Wits or a Supersport or Cape Town City, you can give a youngster time to grow into. They need the ready-made thing. Mm. And I'm not sure Pitso's willing to let someone find their feet in a Sundowns number one jersey.
Mm.
With regards to Peterson, you always wonder about Gavin Hunt. Does he want to hand any kind of advantage to his main opponent in the PSL right now? So it'll be interesting to see if they even allow that or if he vetoes that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure he's a ready-made product as yet. I'm surprised, but I'm not sure about the contract situation. But there are a couple of South Africans abroad who are playing in goal at a very high level, and certainly a guy like Keat, for example, mm-hmm. whose salary I'm sure Patrice could match if you really wanted to bring him back.
Yep.
And he is a legitimate Bafana number one candidate. So there's maybe an option as well, but it'll be interesting. Whoever gets the job is going to be under immediate pressure.
Of course.
In the papers today, we have a couple things. We can brush past these because we don't know how valid they are or if they'll come to fruition. But Justin Shonga looks like he might be out of the door at Pirates.
Mm.
He's only made, I think, 8 appearances in the league this season. He struggled to make his way into that starting 11. What do you make of that?
I think Joseph Zimbar doesn't maybe, you know, he doesn't fit into the system that they're playing right now. But he used to play a lot under Mitchell and Roland, you know, and of course he's a good player, but looking at the system, looking at the diversity that they have, especially up front there, it becomes difficult for any of these guys to play because you've got Pule, you've got your Lodge, you've got Memela, you've got Mango, there's speed, there's skill, there's this, and they also need to come back and defend. So it forces your Shonga to work extra hard. But I think if he goes anywhere else, you know, he'll be good. He's a good quality player. So
definitely. Yeah. New contract on the cards for Buhle Mkhwanazi. What do you think of Wits' new setup with Tyson at right back? They just got Lorenzo Godinho. Do you think, you know, obviously Buhle, I think, deserves the extension, right?
Let me tell you, look at this way. Like, I remember having this discussion with Sean. I said, Sean, now that they signed Godinho, will they play Tyson as a right back or Godinho as a right back? Because Godinho is not a right back. And then we, interesting enough, the first game, Godinho plays as a center back and Tyson as a right back. So if you go back, Tyson has been on the radar for Orlando Pirates because they've always wanted Tyson to come with Orlando Pirates. So now look at Gavin. Gavin, what he does is he signed Godinho just as a backup because he knows that if anything happens off season, Tyson can go, already has a player. So now with Buhle Mkhwanazi, yes, you wouldn't want to lose two of your top players in the team at the same time. So Buhle Mkhwanazi, yes, he deserved it because he's been there. He has served Wits so well. But I think Godinho, you know, Kasaitinje on the side, I think he is a replacement for Tyson. So, but Tyson playing as a right back, I don't think he's good there. I don't think he's... I mean, there when he was younger, probably yes. But right now, I think he's... Even when he defends, you know, and as a right back, you sometimes forget that he's a right back because now you have to open your body. So as a center back, it's good because he's been playing there for so long.
Yeah.
So I think also look at the goals that he conceded, especially against the mistake that he conceded actually against Highlands Park. You know, he's caught, you know, all the time because of now he's not a natural right back. So sometimes when you don't play a certain position for so long, irrespective of how good you are, when it comes back to that day, you might not be as sharp as you think you are. So, but I think as a right back, he's not suitable. So I think it's always great as a center back.
Definitely, especially in this age of pacey right backs. Most right backs and left backs have a lot of pace.
Yeah, you don't want to be running up and down with 18-year-old chief.
Yeah.
Trust.
It's going to be tough. And then lastly, Bradley Hrobler, apparently not for sale. SuperSport United have come out and said this. So what? The question that I have, though, is when clubs come out and say this, are they being serious or are they trying to angle for a higher fee if he does leave, saying like he's off the table, because that's generally a negotiating tactic, I think.
I was going to say,
look, every player, even when clubs do go not for sale, every player has a price that a club's going to go, yes, you can go.
Yeah.
Even Messi, even Ronaldo have got a price that even though the club says, no, he's not for sale, if the money comes, he will go. Bradley's is in an interesting situation, because if this were two or three seasons ago, when none of the big three had strikers who were doing the business, he'd come in because he solves a problem for you. He's scoring goals. He scores them on a regular basis. He's not as flashy as maybe some of the other strikers in the league, but he's very consistent, and that's what you want from a goal scorer. But you find yourself in a situation where Pius have got a guy who's banging goals. You've got Chiefs banging goals. Maybe Sundowns not as much. But I'm not sure he'd go to a crosstown rival either. So that's a difficult one.
Yeah.
So besides those three, who can then afford him after that? I'm not sure anyone brings him in South Africa. Then maybe you start looking for an overseas move. But then again, South African strikers, there's not really a premium on them. And the guys that have banged in goals in the PSL before, who have gone over to Europe, the Mbeumas, and haven't really hit the ground running. Haven't made an impact. Knowledge, Masona, etc. Percy Tau, we saw the other night playing against United, so that was nice. And from what I understand, Mike McCobb says that because of Percy Tau, a couple of the European leagues are going, well, hold on a second, they can produce number 10s.
Mm.
Not so much number 9s, but let's go have a look. I don't think there's a move on the cards right now for him. I would agree with what you're saying. Teko, I'm not sure what you think.
Firstly, what I would say is, like, for teams to actually come out and say Clint is not for sale, I think it's important for players and the agents as well to have a buyout clause. That's the first thing. So when that happens, so that it becomes easier for you as a player if the big guns come, you know, they want, because I mean, for a South African player, I think we all have dreams. You want to play in a Bafana team. You want to play in a derby. You want to play for all these big teams. And once you don't have a buyout clause, it will forever takes longer for you to move from one team to those kind of big teams.
What was
teams.
Your buyout clause, Dick?
I didn't have one. That's why I didn't have it. I didn't have one. I had one the second time with Orlando Pirates when I signed a new contract, but still.
Who determines the buyout clause? The club?
I think the club and I think it's the club.
And when they put a crazy amount on you, is my salary in line with my buyout clause?
It doesn't. That's what I'm saying. Like, it needs to be something that needs to be discussed. Because most of the time, players, they get excited just because Orlando Pirates or Kaizer Chiefs, I'm signing. They don't. Now they're thinking, yeah, but Kaizer Chiefs players, I've seen Musona going overseas. But Musona's contract was different to yours. So if you don't take care of your contract, you'll never go overseas. That's why you see Itu is also still around. He had no buyout clause. So now they can call out whatever fee they want because they want to keep you here. And the next thing, they're not going to even match what you're supposed to be getting. So that's the tricky part of it. That we're slaves, Vijay. So just make sure that you have your buyout clause, irrespective of how much it is. Then you've got a number that you're playing for. So you know that when Galatasaray comes through, you've got a number. You know?
So PSL players, you heard it here. Teko says, if you don't have a buyout clause,
you're going to
be inserted into your contract.
Yeah, right now.
So I've got this week in history. I'm going to try and breeze through these. So on the 28th of February 2010, rival groups of PSG supporters turned violent during a match against Marseille. That resulted in 20 arrests and one fatality. On the 27th of February 1977, Argentina beat Hungary 5-1 in a friendly that marked the international debut of one Diego Maradona.
Wow.
And on the 27th of February 2011, this is a funny one actually, a Colombian league match, an owl wanders onto the pitch. It's soon struck by a ball when a Deportivo player attempted a low clearance. The referee stopped play, and then a Deportivo player, Luis Moreno, walked over to the injured owl and kicked it off the pitch. Moreno said after the match that he was trying not to hurt the owl, but wanted to only see if it could still fly. But then the league determined that Moreno's actions were a deliberate provocation of the home fans, suspended him for 2 games, and fined him $560.
So what you're saying is he fouled the owl?
He fouled it.
That joke of the day.
There you go.
Oh, man. I have some players abroad stuff.
Players abroad on Sakala Duma Radio.
So Keenan Ayer, Luke Leroux, and Tashreeq Matthews all played for Varbergs in Monday's 5-1 Swedish Cup loss to Hammarby. It was Keenan's first start. Leroux and Matthews came off the bench in the 61st minute. Last week Thursday, we saw Percy Tau play against Man United. He started in that one. Not his best performance, but he put someone on skates, though. Who was the defender that he sourced in the box?
I actually can't remember.
Man United fan.
But you know, they're all anyway, so.
True.
Elsewhere, Simon Bele, he played in Monday's 1-0 home win over Fatima for Sertanense in Portugal. And Banyana forward, Lindo Mutlalo, mispronouncing. She grabbed two goals on debut for her new side, Djurgården, playing in the Swedish Women's Cup. And she came off the bench for that one.
Yeah.
So really impressive stuff. Banyana players are doing absolute bits right now in Europe. So, you know, one good World Cup, you see what it can do for.
Dude, like this is great, man. Look, I had a discussion with Amanda Dlamini the other day. I said, you know, after that World Cup, you can see, you know, now because of in South Africa's as a country, we've been saying that we need to do something about ladies' football, but the World Cup has helped us in that sense that we're seeing so many players slowly and surely going overseas. And that also needs to tell us something as the government or as the country in South Africa. Like, look, if our women are so that good to go to your Benfica, to your Milan, you know, we need to do something now. We need to start producing players. So what do? So we start having those kind of setups, those mini leagues. Now, because of now, the teams were forced, right, to have MDC teams. So
sure.
Let's have a ladies team on top of that. Let's force those teams to actually have the ladies league. Let them have their own tournaments. Let them expose them the way that you expose MDC. I think there's a lot that can be done in South Africa. We need to start somewhere.
100%. And you know what's interesting, Teko, is that 10 years ago, we were exporting our male players to the big teams in Europe. Mm. We were playing in the English Premier League, La Liga, Italy. That's stopped. We're playing in the Belgians and and the Italian B leagues and the Portugal B leagues and French.
Not even French. Where is
Azerbaijan?
Azerbaijan.
Our ladies are playing at world class clubs.
Yeah.
So if they're reaching world class standards with limited resources, and you look at the resources that a PSL player has these days compared to what they had 10 years ago, something's missing that we're not getting up to the standards whereby we can compete. And that's a problem. I know you spoke to Mike McCabe last week about why are we not exporting players to big leagues anymore.
Mm.
The one thing he mentioned was that the comfortability of the South African player, there's a lot of money in our league.
Mm.
So rather than go be a small name in Belgium or in Portugal, you can be a big name in South Africa and earn the same money.
Yeah.
Two, there doesn't seem to be that hunger anymore to prove yourself on the bigger stage. In the past, guys like Fish and Bartlett and Fortune wanted to actually put themselves up amongst the best, test themselves amongst the best. There just seems to be that lack of wanting to show your talent.
Yeah.
And test it against the best in the world. Which is why when you see Percy Tau against United, you get goosebumps. But we need to be seeing more of our players do that.
I think also what contributes to that, Clint, is because we don't have so many footballers that played there that actually did well, like in the last 10 years. Now we're riding on pace because of pace. We're hoping if Percy does well, then we hope that
he unlocks it for us, like Pinar did for so many years.
Exactly. So now it's just the guys go and play in Azerbaijan 1 year and then they come back. So that also builds so much into the local players. They're like, if he's that good and go overseas and comes back, what am I going to do there? I might as well stay here. Let me milk it here. So that's why you feel like there's so much comfortability within the country. It's because guys that are actually supposed to be making it, they're not. So they don't give the guys here confidence in
hope.
Their culture.
Yeah.
Definitely. Hope. Speaking of overseas, let's have the international news desk. I'd like to welcome the new Car Wash international correspondent, Kurt Buckerfield. How are you doing, Kurt?
Good, thank you. What is up, my good people?
We have the El Clasico to preview. In other news, though, I don't know how much you know about this. There's the coronavirus impacting Italian league matches. I think they're going to be played behind closed doors. And you actually tweeted a record. You were the first to tweet this record from Lionel Messi.
Yes.
Tell the people, please.
So it was against Eibar when Messi scored four goals. He had just surpassed 1,000 goal contributions. So he's currently on, I think it's 1,002 contributions in 854 matches.
Phenomenal.
The first player in recorded history to achieve 1,000 goal contributions. Incredible.
Okay. Yeah, and I remember growing up and people always said Pelé scored over 1,000 goals.
Yeah, but he was playing against people that are in the army. Yeah. Guns, they're not footballers.
Against the squirrels.
Yeah. And also, it was a lot of friendlies. A
lot of friendlies, yeah.
Yeah,
I think Romario was the same story.
Yeah.
He claims to have over 1,000 goals, but it's unofficial
over
matches.
1,000 girlfriends.
Yeah. Messi can genuinely say Europe and Argentina on the international stage, 1,000.
Yeah.
This debate about the greatest of all time, where we bring Pelé into it, and then you bring Maradona into it, and you, the difference is, and I think Teco's hit the nail on the head. Pelé, his career, judged by the likes of us, we base it on highlight reels. So if you go onto YouTube, you'll see him at the World Cup against Sweden, knock the ball up over three players and put it in. So his career, we are basing it on highlight clips. Maradona, we only really saw him when he played World Cup games. So every four years, we would watch him play four or five games, and he'd do very well. But we didn't see what he did on a day-to-day, every week basis.
Mm.
Messi and Ronaldo, every second of their playing career is documented and zoomed in on. And so they've been judged on every second of what they do.
Yeah.
So it's different eras. And yes, Pelé was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And for me, Maradona, I wish I'd seen him day in and out, because I think he truly was a beast and would be relevant even today. But the fact that Messi and Ronaldo are doing it under magnifying glass, where every touch is...
But that's just to add to that, Clint, I think like in this age of technology when coaches can analyze every move, your game is studied completely. Everyone knows what Messi's going to do when he's on the ball, and you still can't stop him. Whereas back in the day, I don't think video technology, you know, players weren't studying Pelé on video. They might have been, but not as in depth as it is
today. If we had VAR then, England wouldn't have won a World Cup.
Yeah, and Maradona would only have one World Cup. As well. Yeah, hand of God. But let's look at this El Clasico. What are the key things to look out for in this match? Is this the first or the second? It's the second one without Cristiano in it, right?
It's I think the second or third one, maybe without Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Third one. But yeah, Real Madrid definitely miss a player like that in these types of games. He's probably the, at least in the modern day, the biggest big match player there is, or the best at least.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he still holds the record for the longest scoring streak in El Clasicos, which was 6 matches.
Mm-hmm.
He's the third top goal scorer in the fixture, and he was just at Real Madrid for, 10 or 9 years.
Mm.
So yeah, Real Madrid miss a player like that.
Yeah. Interestingly, Real Madrid kind of mirror our own Soweto derby this week, because they got hammered last night by City.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they got Sergio Ramos was sent off, if I'm not mistaken.
Fantastic.
So they go into this El Clasico again under pressure from their fans, having just been embarrassed in a cup game.
Yeah. And also similarly, this also might decide the title in Spain, as this weekend Soweto derby might decide the PSL. So it's going to be an interesting one. Stats-wise, what are we looking at? What's the feel? Because I mean, we know Messi's coming into this on the back of a 4-goal performance. In the league, how's Madrid been performing this season?
Well, they've kept the most clean sheets. They've been defensively sound. But over the last few games, I think they've lost 3 games of their last 5 across all competitions. But they definitely come into this game off form. But I think the same can be said for Barcelona. That 5-goal match, I think, it was paper over the cracks, to be honest. They aren't playing really well. Mm-hmm. Messi hasn't been playing really well. I know when you look at his stats, he's got 23 goals and 16 assists in 29 games. So you go, well, this guy's in the form of his life. But he really isn't. He isn't playing that well.
Mm.
So I don't think that it's a difficult one to call. I think I'm going to back Real Madrid for this game, to be honest with you. Barcelona have too many injuries. I mean, Suarez, Dembele, they're missing a lot of players.
Mm-hmm. But they have the GOAT.
They do have. And That's funny.
Did you see
he actually was brilliant
unveiling?
In his cameo.
Did you see the unveiling? There's video footage of him.
I wish players would stop doing that. Tap the ball 3 times and kick it into the crowd.
Yeah. It is unbelievable. What's interesting is Messi's come out recently and said, Barcelona are not good enough to win the Champions League.
Yeah. Mm.
And then a day or two later, the coach has come out and said, well, I don't agree with that. I mean, he has to toe the line. Obviously, the directors have probably given him a call and said, hey, message just said we're not good enough to win the Champions League. Why? And he's had to come and say, well, we are. But I do think they're better prepared and better. Just their style of football is always going to be a dominant front foot kind of style of football. And based on what happened to Real Madrid last night, I'm going to go with Barcelona.
You're going to go with Barcelona. Yeah,
yeah. I just and just Messi, doesn't matter if he's off form.
Yeah.
The guy is just a genius.
Yeah.
And there's nobody or no system that can stop him. That's what makes him
well,
so
I think
great.
The fixture depends on him.
Yeah.
The way the result goes, I think if Messi pitches up, then Barcelona win comfortably. But if he has a quiet game, like he did in the last Clásico, it was a 0-0 back in December. Then I think it could go Real Madrid's way. I really do.
Yeah. Messi is very moody. Eh? He plays when he wants to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I just hope that on the Clásico, from the game, from the first minute, I think he needs to step it up as well. Because
yeah.
I think he's been in the media lately for all the wrong reasons. And we never thought Messi could actually speak to the media about what's happened
yeah,
in Barcelona.
Yeah, those Vidal thing.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I think now he needs to actually start showing on the pitch as well. We know that he's concerned about the team and maybe not signing the right players. Some of the players that we're signing, the YouTube players, we don't know. When we sign last minute, YouTube player come here. So that shows that Barcelona, anybody actually can now play for Barcelona. Because we also saw, who's this Boateng now plays for Barcelona? Clint, come on. Mm-hmm. Prince Boateng, Barcelona. Mm-hmm. You know, so it shows now that there's a problem in that team. So I think, you know, this is maybe one of the games that actually will, you know, maybe put water, you know, on the fire that's happening within the team. Sure. I think it's important for them to win this game.
Sure. Definitely. Well, if Messi did want to put pressure on the Barcelona coaching staff and the sporting director, this is the game to lose. We hope he doesn't think like that.
No, of course not.
Could Sergio Ramos getting a red card, does that put pressure on him in this game coming up? Do the fans point fingers at him for what happened against City? And does he come out with a point to prove?
I don't think so, if I'm honest with you. I don't think so. I think that his red card was warranted. It was his 26th red card of his Real Madrid career.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, he's an animal.
No, he is.
I'm just saying, does he come out with a point to prove to the fans? I'm not doubting that he deserved the red card, but does he come out with a point, and does Messi take advantage of that, knowing that ref's probably going to be looking at Ramos?
And, of course, he's been sent off. I think he's got the most red cards in this fixture as well.
Yeah, yeah. No,
so
he's definitely Messi to pieces in this fixture.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember years ago when he, I think he pushed Puyol in the face, and while he was walking off the field, he pushed Xavi in the face and he completely lost the plot.
Yeah, he's an animal.
Definitely, I think he's under pressure, but I think the whole of Real Madrid's defense is under pressure right now. They were having a great season up until a few games ago. And Ramos, defensively, I think over the years, he's been seen as one of the greatest defenders of all time, which I'm not going to argue with. But I think defensively, I don't think he's in the same bracket as a Piqué defensively. I think Piqué reads the game better than him. So Ramos, if you're going to run at him, I think you can get behind him. He makes rash decisions, as we've seen time and time again. But he's a great player, of course.
He's a warrior.
Definitely, of course. But definitely under pressure in this game.
And that is how we wrap up the international news desk. I know you are under pressure, Kurt, so we can let you go now. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you,
Kurti.
So I am under time pressure now. Let's jump into upcoming games. You guys have kind of laid your predictions down. So you're saying in the El Clasico, you're going with a Barcelona win.
Correct.
Barcelona, sir.
Barcelona. Sean agrees. He's going for a Barcelona win. Chiefs versus Pirates. Sean, actually, I'm gonna keep this one to myself until you guys say yours. So what's your prediction for Soweto Derby?
Soweto Derby. Yeah. Orlando Pirates win.
Orlando Pirates win. He's going for a Chiefs win. And then, lastly, SuperSport United.
Clint?
I'm going for a Pirates win.
Oh.
I think Pirates are just going to play with more freedom.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, cool. So if Clint gets that right, he immediately gets 27 points. Because we can get him on the log there.
Kind of a percentage, he'll win. One out of one, you know.
Definitely. And lastly, SuperSport United versus Bidvest Wits. Thoughts on that game? What's your score prediction there?
I'm going to go with Wits. I don't think they lose this one. Mm. I think Gavin's going to talk to the lads, get them up for this, and have a real go.
I'm all for a draw, Chief.
Going for a draw. Actually, Sean also goes for a SuperSport Wits draw. Let's jump to car of the week. Sean.
Ba-ba-boom.
Thank you. Sean let me know that I should jump over to Dino Ndlovu's Instagram. He's got a Rolls Royce Phantom. I don't have all the deets like Sean has for this thing, but I think we all know the Rolls Royce Phantom. You know, suicide doors.
Deets.
Classic.
what are those things inside there? Like the stars or something like that.
Yeah, that, yeah. Like the roof panel type thing.
Dude.
It's been in mad rap videos, we know.
Yeah. Dino, I see you.
And then we have the
we
have the motivational quote of the week from Grant Kekana. He says, sometimes you need to step outside, get some fresh air, and remind yourself of who you are and who you want to be. I like that. I like that one a lot. Here's a fun fact. Clint, this is your team. A Man City fan was banned in 1995 for bringing dead chickens into City's main road ground. He had a habit of celebrating City's goals by swinging the dead birds around his head.
It's the same guy who kicked the owl. He's got a thing against birds.
That is how we wrap up today's edition of the Car Wash.
Yeah.
It's been fun. It's been great. Clint, thank you for stepping in Sean's absence.
Always fun.
And as always, thank you to Teko Modise, the general.
Slupahu.
Yeah, fun fact has been said. We can wrap that thing up. Play that funky music.
Today is a great day for car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on Sakala Duma Radio. This is a Sangana Corn.